Here's a quick word from our football educational partners over at the Scouting Academy.
Listen, we've said it all the time. If you love the analysis and you're passionate about football, then you really need to check out the Scouting Academy. Whether you're a football coach, aspiring writer, or even aspiring football agent, the Scouting Academy is really a perfect place for you to learn and develop your skills as an analyst. With curriculum that spans over 375 years of coaching and personnel experience, the Scouting Academy offers you a 16-week online course that you can tailor and build to meet your needs and your interests. Whether you're learning about wide receivers or defensive linemen, you can make the experience what you want it to be. Listen, I've said it to you on this podcast many times. I've spent my own money, my own time, and time away from my friends and family because I am just this passionate about this game. And the Scouting Academy is the place where I really feel like I've learned the most I've ever learned about the game of football. It's made me a better analyst. It's made me a better person in terms of the coaching I do on the field. I can't say enough great things about it. If you have any questions about the Scouting Academy, please don't hesitate to reach out to Dan Hatman on Twitter or reach out to the Scouting Academy online via email. I'm open to all questions as well. Heck, I'm still even a student there myself. Please don't hesitate to reach out. I really think that once you learn all the tools and gain the knowledge that they have to offer, I really think you're going to be absolutely excited about the game of football again.
This is the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast.
This is where it all counts. This is why we're here. This is why each one of us are here.
And now, here's your host.
Welcome back to another edition of the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast. I am Paul Perticchese, and joining me this week, special guest Ben Solak of NFL Draft Network. Ben, welcome to the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast.
Thanks, Paul. I appreciate you having me on, man.
Yeah, I mean, so much to break down. Week 10 of the college football season in the books. We're going to break down a lot of what we saw on film, talk about a lot of NFL draft eligible prospects. We're going to look at some underclassmen as well, obviously in the Devy slant, take a peek ahead to week 11 in the tail of the tape, and then close it out as always with the NFL rookie report for this past week in the NFL season as well. So let's dig right in, start with the NFL draft report right at the top, and let's start the quarterback position. Ben, I want to get your take right off the bat. Recently on Twitter, you had a video clip discussing Justin Herbert, the consensus number one quarterback prospect in the 2019 NFL draft. But from the looks of that video, you have some reservations or concerns about him. It seems to be, for most, he's the number one quarterback prospect. I know for me, he is. Obviously, there's some things that I have question marks about as well. But in terms of the landscape of maybe what's available this upcoming year, he does sit atop my board. So what about for you? Kind of break down your thoughts on him, even though you do have reservations. Is he still at the top of your board? It's just that you think it's a weak class, or do you not even think he's at the top?
Yeah, no, he's going to be at the top of my board. One of the little bites, I suppose, I have in the full video, which is an entire like episode of just breaking down his film, going with the Telestrator or whatever. One of the bites that I have is, yeah, I don't think I'd take him before a Josh Rosen or a Baker Mayfield or Lamar Jackson or a Sam Darnold, which were my top four quarterbacks in last year's class. To me, he's not up there in that echelon, but he's going to be the top guy in this class. He doesn't have a lot of competition. I'm also a little lower on Dwayne Haskins, who's kind of exploded out this year, who I think has got some mechanical concerns as well. And then Will Greer, obviously, I think is going to be my top senior, but this is a guy who is more of a late day two style of, maybe you win, in spite of him being your quarterback. Haskins, even in preseason work, when I was evaluating him over the summer to get a preseason eval, I said, man, we're excited about this kid's his potential. We're excited about the arm strength and some of the highlight reel throws. And yeah, I'm there with y'all. But on a snap-to-snap basis, he doesn't like to come off his first read. He doesn't like pressure, and his mechanics can get really wonky when he feels it, which is just the sign of a guy who hasn't started a lot. That's not uncommon. when it comes to these young college quarterbacks. And very frequently, it's something that you simply see because he doesn't have a lot of experience and he's still a little skittish. And I think that that's still translating over. Simply, he feels a lot of phantom pressure. The second, you know, he sees a flash of color somewhere he doesn't like, he really wants to get out of that pocket. And if there's an alleyway, he's going to break and he's going to run, even if he's got decent, you know, he's got decent reads down the field. He's got the coverage that he wants. So he's easy to fluster. And then even when the pocket's clean, right now he's inconsistent mechanically. He's got a real big body, real long limbs. And so that means that when he has mechanical issues, they get exacerbated a little bit because his motion's not super compact and his stride's pretty long. So if he's off by a little bit, it ends up being a lot. And you see that because the ball doesn't come out of his hand perfect every time. And sometimes throws just sail on him and sometimes they die on him. It's not like, you know, with Greer, you might say, okay, we know what Greer is and we know what Greer's bad at and good at. Herbert's still got a lot of growth to him. So it's tough to say we know exactly what he is right now. What I do think he is a project still. He still needs significant development. So if you draft him, like if the Giants were to draft him early, you would need to have a plan in place to bring him along. You shouldn't be expecting to win in 2019 if you select him right away. That's my current opinion on Herbert.
Yeah, I mean, I think you brought up a lot of good points there. And I think it kind of, you know, goes to the mindset that he might not come out. I mean, you talked about Herbert. You talked about Haskins. Obviously, you know, Herbert, we had some film on in the summer. Haskins, we had like one game or so last year. Yeah. And, they've shown glimpses this year. I think they've shown traits and skill sets that are going to intrigue NFL teams. You know, listen, I think we've seen, you know, going back as far as like the Jake Locker and Christian Ponder year, quarterbacks get pushed up the board. It happens on a regular basis. You know, I know, you know, while I believed he had traits last year to be a first round pick, many other people didn't believe Josh Allen belonged there as well. And I think that's kind of the mindset that we're going to see with a lot of quarterbacks as we just kind of move forward in today's, you know, NFL, that a lot of these guys are going to have some warts and going to have some flaws, but they're also going to have certain traits and characteristics that intrigue NFL teams. And there's just so many teams that are in need of that next guy, that NFL quarterback. I mean, like, the Giants are going to face tremendous pressure this year to take a quarterback in the top 10 after the backlash of not taking one next year and it going so south so quickly, you know, this season. You know, it's going to be a lot of pressure. So do they push someone up the board that maybe shouldn't be a top five pick? And I'll bring up a couple of other names, you know, and what if Herbert and Haskins go back and then, you know, then they push themselves to the 2020 class where you're going to have Tua, you know, and other guys kind of, you know, join the fray here of being guys that are going to be maybe potentially even higher than these guys. It's going to be fascinating. I actually think when push comes to shove, Herbert's going to come out, even though I know he likes playing there. He wants to play with his brother potentially, because the writing's on the wall that he's going to be a top five pick probably. Like, unless the rest of the season goes really south, he's probably going to be a top five pick. And I don't know if he can definitely say he'll be a top five pick next year, because we see when these guys go back to school, they get nitpicked to the nth degree over and over and over. We see that every single year. People start to really hone in on the flaws and try to find things to critique about him. And Herbert already has some concerns. So if he goes back another whole year and he doesn't show significant growth, people might say, well, he's stalling, he's stagnant, he's not improving. So I think it's hard to pass up being a top five pick, you know, whether it's the Raiders, whether it's the Broncos, whether it's the Giants. You know, those are franchises that are in desperate need of a franchise quarterback if Oakland looks to move on from Carr, which is a separate conversation. So I think it's going to be hard. And I even think it might be hard for Haskins to go back if he thinks he's in that mix, because I don't know if there's a scenario, if he thinks he's going to go top 10, I don't know if he can go much higher, you know? So it's one of those things that's like, go back to school, try to develop. But Matt and I always talk about this. How much developing do these quarterbacks truly do at the collegiate game? Because these coaches are paid a lot of money and have a lot of pressure to win. And they're not creating these guys that are perfect for the NFL. They're trying to win football games at the college level, you know? And I'm going to kind of transition this to another guy who, before the season started, was considered a pretty much a first round lock, I think, by people projecting, you know, so far out ahead, and that's Jarrett Stidham. I always thought Auburn was a horrific choice for him when he transferred out of Baylor. The scheme that Auburn runs, I had a feeling Gus Malzahn was not going to adapt to the quarterback, and he was going to try to adapt the quarterback to his scheme, and I just don't think it was ever the right place for him. And Stidham has been very poor throughout this year, that I think at best now he's probably a top 100 guy, and I think the first round's probably out of the mix. What's your take on Jared Stidham? I mean, he had a nice comeback victory this week over Texas A&M, but he's got a lot of improving down the stretch here to try to gain back some of that momentum that he might have had in August.
Yeah, I was fortunate that A&M game was one of the more recent Auburn games I've been able to get my eyes on, kind of once they started to struggle early in the year and it became clear they weren't really going to be a playoff contender. And obviously Stidham was struggling as well. I kind of, you know, started bypassing Auburn games for other games, but I was watching A&M because I like some of the players on their defense. And Stidham had himself one of his better games I've seen. And I was like, oh, that's very exciting. And he had a couple of really impressive throws. He throws a nice heater, especially to the back pylon in the red zone, which is a great skill. And he can throw with touch in intermediate areas, which is nice. Stidham was a guy even coming in where we said, you know, you're looking at his tape and you go, where is the evidence that this guy reads a defense well? He's forcing a lot of throws, A, and B, a lot of his choice routes are very simple reads. And so you're at a point where the touchdown interception numbers aren't fantastic and the completion percentage numbers aren't fantastic, but he's running a high percentage offense. And then there's kind of a disparity there where you're like, ooh, you know, you want to see a lot more evidence that this guy can parse out how a defense is going to be attacking him, and he's going to be able to adapt, and he's going to be able to improvise, and he's going to be able to make the correct choice. He has the self-control to just take the check down instead of pushing the ball down the field. There, you know, he has kind of the vestibular sense to know when pressure's coming to just get rid of the ball. So a lot of those secondary traits that just helps a quarterback not shoot himself in the foot, I guess you might say. And that's something that's simply been always lacking. For me, with Stidham, he simply seems like a guy who, yeah, Auburn's offense, like you said, he's throwing four different routes. You know, it is a much a simple system for a quarterback in terms of what he's putting out on the field. But even then, with the limited choices that he has, he just seems like a guy who doesn't calibrate risk and reward very well, and puts his offense in tricky spots. Puts them in long third down situations when he had free money to take in the underneath areas. He doesn't seem like a good decision maker to me, and he never has. And so physical tools are exciting. Well, the second he started getting Trubisky comps and Romo comps, you know, that was a real, like, pump the brakes moment for me. That's way too much for Stidham. He's still a guy who should be interesting in terms of bring him in and see what he's got. But as of right now, with what he's put out as far as an Auburn product, I don't know how you trust him to have starter-level traits in terms of his mental game and then his kind of, like, decision-making, self-control, kind of those secondary traits that we talk about.
Yeah, and Stidham was a guy who, I said it early in the year a lot, before he really started to lose some momentum as like a potential first-round pick, that I always thought the individual parts were much better than the whole. Like, I always watched him and I was like, yeah, he shows good mechanics. He shows, you know, good arm talent. Like, you know, he seems like a very natural thrower. He's got, you know, checks the size box, you know, all that stuff. But it always seemed like he left me wanting more. And I was always waiting for, like, a big moment where I watched that game. And I always go back to watching, you know, Josh Rosen carry the team last year against Texas A&M on that opening weekend where, you know, he scored whatever, like 40 points comeback or whatever. And it was like one of those moments where you just kind of saw him, and he got lucky on a couple of plays in that game as well. But you kind of just saw him, like, that moment where you kind of said, okay, like, an NFL team, this is a guy who's going to play and potentially be a high level player at the NFL. Like he had that moment, and I always left wanting more from Stidham. And then it just kind of has went south this year. I don't know if he could even come out, but it goes back to the point of, is he really going to get any better at Auburn in what they ask him to do there? Is he going to really impress, you know, significantly more where people are going to have less concerns about some of the things we've seen about him? I don't know. It's going to be one of those things to kind of follow closely. And I'll use that to kind of transition to the last quarterback question of the episode. And I'm going to mention a couple guys here, and you don't have to touch upon each one, you know, one or two that maybe you have a strong take on. I feel like the next wave of guys, it's been a very roller coaster type year for this past week. Drew Lock had maybe his most impressive game of the year against a tough Florida defense. He tends to play well in games when I think the talent level for Missouri is on par with the other team, but very often in the SEC, the talent level is significantly under par. And this week was a really impressive game against Florida my biggest concern about Locke is I think he's a statue in the pocket, and I think that is slowly fading away at the NFL level as offensive line play continues to evaporate and deteriorate, that I think you need to have the ability to play off structure and play off, you know, off script and make plays with your legs and buy some time, which is why I am a little bit intrigued with Will Grier. Some decision-making questions, some clearly he's got to be a little bit better in terms of risk versus reward. At times he's too over aggressive, but I think Grier throws the ball with good touch and anticipation. I think he plays with good poise, and I love his ability to play off structure. So I think he had an impressive game this week against Texas. I was not expecting him to perform at the level he did, and he has a little moxie about him. Listen, I've said it. I'm not saying he's going to be a top five pick. I'm not saying he's Baker Mayfield, but at times you see glimpses of what made Baker Mayfield special at college. You see that a little bit with Will Grier. So those two guys really intrigue me. Ryan Finley was a guy who was getting some day two love before the season started. I'm on the fence if that's where he belongs. And then the other guy is Daniel Jones out of Duke, who, according to, you listen to some people in the know, and I, you know, Daniel Jeremiah, Dane Brugler, people really good at what they do, really with ears to the ground, and they're saying this kid's potential second round pick now and maybe pushing his way even higher than that. Any thoughts on those four guys that I kind of brought up? You can kind of go any which way you want with it.
Yeah, I'll hit Jones, because Jones is a guy who I remember watching a young redshirt freshman quarterback for Duke outduel Mitchell Trubisky in the UNC game, which is a huge rivalry game, obviously, and just wondering, okay, well, who's this kid? Because I'm going to need to know his name later. And it was Daniel Jones, who made some outstanding, redshirt freshman, outstanding plays on the run, threw some beautiful balls down the field with trash around him, just like everything you wanted to see. And coming into the season even, we're looking at Daniel Jones and we're saying, all right, like the size, the athleticism, the big arm, the downfield abilities, he's kind of just checking all of those boxes, not with consistency yet, young man. He's checking all those boxes you really, really like to see for a young quarterback. Obviously, David Cutcliffe product coming into the season. Now, what are we going to get out of him? And then he started playing in the Army game, and he played the Northwestern game, and he was really, really hot to start the year. He looked like he had improved in his decision-making. He was, I think, a lot crisper going through his reads from the pocket, and that's when you really started to hear some of this NFL hype. Now, what happens in that Northwestern game, Jones goes down. He breaks his collarbone. He's out for, like, only 3 weeks. His recovery period was insane, or it was even less or something like that. So he's back on the field immediately. He has not looked the same, which makes a lot of sense because it seems like he was rushed back from injury. So he's probably physically limited a little bit in what he can do, so on and so forth. But Jones, before that injury, was really showing the step forward you like to see for a redshirt junior, given what his developmental process had looked like up to that point. And it was really exciting. And that Northwestern game was really, really strong until that injury. And you kind of wonder what could have been there. But I think the NFL is right to say, if we're going to have a guy who really is stepping forward in this class, you know, Joe Marino at the Draft Network is our ACC guy, and I've seen Jones before. We kind of have been like, if there's a guy who's going to step up, it's going to be Jones. And while the post-collarbone play isn't as strong, I think what you saw in the beginning of the season does indicate that he is taking a big developmental step forward. Is it enough for him to come out? Like you were alluding to, when you can go get yourself paid, go get yourself paid. You know, get out of college, enter the NFL. Obviously, developmental processes can be a lot stronger at the NFL if you're put into a good situation where you've got stable offensive minds around you, and it's basically not the Cleveland Browns, is what I'm saying. But, you know, and Buffalo Bills, to be honest, they don't have anybody. But you have the opportunity to develop much nicer at the NFL level. I think Jones coming out makes a lot of sense. And then I think him being a buzzy prospect to get up near the top, especially if there's no Herbert, does also make a lot of sense.
Yeah, and you brought it up. When I watched him in the summer and put him in the Saturday, Sunday 2019 scouting notebook, the concerns I had were decision-making and accuracy. I mean, those were two things that, you know, and when I've watched him and had eyes on him this year, I have seen some growth in those areas. So I think it makes sense that, you know, he's moving up boards a little bit. And obviously, he's another one of those guys that the athleticism, I think, is a big plus. And it kind of goes back to what I said before. I think more and more NFL teams are looking for a guy who can maneuver and move around the pocket and make plays with his legs and not just pick up yards, but being able to keep plays alive. Like, I'd be stunned if the next Giants quarterback that they draft high isn't somebody who has those type of capabilities to make plays like on the move and off structure. You know, a guy like Drew Lock, I don't think it's going to fit with what the Giants want to do, you know, moving forward. But a guy like Daniel Jones, a guy like Will Greer, and listen, maybe this is the top of the second round, you know, if they go that route. You know, I think it's going to be a guy that has the athletic ability to do different things. I think that's just so important in today's NFL game. So let's transition this over to the running back. A couple names here that I made note of from this past week that I kind of wanted to touch upon was Zach Moss continues to really impress, the running back out of Utah. Another guy that, you know, was a little bit under the radar. He was on my watch list of guys to keep in mind before the season started, but really been impressive this year. I know he's a guy that Dane Brugler has towards the top of his running back board, thinks he could potentially be a top 50 pick. You know, he 128 yards, one touchdown this past week, looked really good in his performance. Travion Williams versus Auburn. Travion Williams is a guy who I really thought was maybe in for a breakout year at Texas A&M this year. He's had a couple really big time games. They haven't been as consistent, but really impressive this past weekend, 101 yards, two touchdowns, looked really good, explosive player. I don't think he's a guy at the NFL level who's going to carry a heavy workload, but I think he's a guy who used as a part of a committee could really add a different element and dynamic to a backfield at the NFL level. Benny Snell, watched that game against Georgia. I'm not as high on Benny Snell. I know some people are. I see a two down between the tackles, thumper. I mean, maybe I missed something. I don't see a guy, you know, I see a guy like, you know, similar to what I thought of maybe a guy like Samaje Perine when he came out, you know, similar to those type of guys, you know, a Dave Barry type prospect, you know, early down player at the NFL level. I was impressed with Elijah Holyfield out of Georgia. He's a guy who I've had questions of why DeAndre Swift hasn't been getting a heavier workload, and we'll talk about him in the next segment. But Holyfield looked really good this week. His ability, you know, to push the pile, you know, one cut and get north-south really quickly. He's a guy who, before the year started, I wasn't sure if he was a guy, you know, who had an NFL future. But now I think he's squarely in the mix as a Dave Brees type prospect, and I've been kind of impressed with him. And then Travis Homer out of Miami, haven't talked much about him. I was a big fan of him in the summer. 18 carries, 133 yards, and a touchdown. I think he's got a little bit of everything to his game. I like his breakaway ability. I like his short area quickness. He's a guy who I'm a little bit intrigued with. So, Ben, any thoughts on, you know, if you want to start with either Zach Moss or Travion Williams, you know, or take it to Benny Snell or Travis Homer as well. Any thoughts on those guys?
Yeah, I like every name you said, so I'm going to hit every single one real quick.
Sure.
Moss is a player who, in summer scouting, I said, I don't think this guy's an NFL athlete. I really worry about his ability to gather, to change directions, to execute zone reads where he's got to put a foot in the ground and get upfield. Yeah, he looks healthier in 2018, and he looks quicker, but still, I think that, you know, he's getting some early round hype, and I think that's vastly overselling his athletic ability. He's a banger. And his contact balance is impressive. He's got a lot of thickness to him. I just don't know how well he's going to be able to get away from contact at the NFL level. That still really concerns me. That said, I will take Moss over a Benny Snell. And when Snell's hype was kind of getting big, when Kentucky was going undefeated, I said, like, you know, if y'all like Snell, watch Zach Moss, and he's going to be a little bit better of a prospect. I just think that Snell doesn't even have the same level of power and contact balance, tackle-breaking ability that you're going to see from Moss. I like Williams a lot. And what we've been told about Williams is last year, they're asking him to execute zone concepts, and that's simply not his style of running. It's not where it's going to be his strength. They're doing a lot more power stuff with him this year under the new Jimbo Fisher, obviously the new head coach, and that's something that he's more comfortable reading right now, just kind of that one gap and go situation. But I like his explosiveness into the hole a lot. That excites me, and I feel very similarly to you do. I feel about Travis Homer, a guy who I don't understand why we're not talking about him more. Homer's not, you know, blowaway prospect. In no way is he like a top guy or anything. But he's very well-rounded. He can catch the football. Like you said, breakaway speed, which is something a lot of guys in this class are lacking. And I think he does a very nice job to get his shoulder pads down in the hole and break a couple tackles. He's a tough runner who goes vertical very quickly against a lot of positive yardage. To me, that's like a clear positive addition to a committee that you can get at a discount in the draft. So I like Homer a lot. I think he's a guy we need to talk about a fair bit more.
Yeah, I mean, and I think this running back class is very up in the air in terms of how it could come off the board. I mean, obviously we got Rodney Anderson. You know, how does he, where does his draft capital stay after the injury this year to end the year? You got David Montgomery, who I know, you know, NFL draft Twitter and the Devy community for people who are in that are very high on him. I've never heard that the NFL people are so high on him. I like his game a lot. I would love to see him more heavily involved in the receiving game because I think he's really good there, but mm-hmm. Iowa State just not really doing that. You got Damian Harris, and listen, Alabama guys at times are so hard to really evaluate in the run game because their offensive line is great. They have so many running backs. I mean, I feel like those are the three guys that are talked about as much at the top of the running back board, you know, and then you got the smaller guys like Justice Hill and Bryce Love and Miles Gaskin, a couple of those guys I was surprised didn't come out last year. You got Miles Sanders, who I think's really elevated his stock this year. Yeah. And then a couple of the guys that we just talked about. I think the running back board, there's a lot to be shaken out about it. I think a lot of it's yet to be determined. The pre-draft process can go a long way in kind of shaking that out, and maybe this, even the rest of the season. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to also be interesting to see how many underclassmen declare, knowing what's in the woodwork and how good the 2020 running back class
right.
has the capabilities to be. Do some of these juniors say, let me go out now, I got a better chance of being a top four round guy this year than maybe I'm going to have next year? So that's something to keep in the back of our minds. So let's transition this to the pass catchers. We'll start at the wide receiver position because you wrote a really intriguing article recently talking about, you know, the age of the old school number one wide receiver is kind of not relevant anymore. And this is something that Matt and I talked a lot about last year around the draft season, you know, because we were big Calvin Ridley fans. And all we heard last year was there's not a number one type wide receiver. There's a lot of complimentary guys. And we had a whole conversation. I also think one of the episodes we had with Matt Waldman, we talked about this, how it is changing. And that was something that your article really did an excellent job talking about, that number one wide receivers come in all shapes and sizes now. I'm not sure why it's been, you know, why it's taking so long for the national consensus to kind of understand that. I mean, we've seen Antonio Brown dominating the league for years. We've seen Odell dominating the league. You know, we've seen the bigger guys like Julio and Calvin Johnson. So there's been this wide spectrum, but every year we hear the same catchphrases, you know, as we talk about the draft prospects. There's no true number one wide receivers. There's no true number. And I think this draft class was getting some push in the past that it was going to have more of those prototypical old word number one wide receivers. And for whatever reasons, I don't know if some guys have underperformed a little bit, you know, so I feel like some people have started to come off that. Your take was that this wide receiver class is very unique, very intriguing. I'm under the impression that I don't think anybody's top 10 worthy, but I think there's a handful of guys who could go round one, who maybe this is like the Corey Coleman, Josh Doctson year that we see a wave of guys in that 20 to 32 range. And I think that's kind of where some of these guys belong. So, you know, some of the guys at the top that I'd love to get your quick takes on, I'm a big fan of Calvin Harmon, N'Keal Harry. I have some athletic and separation concerns, but I do think his ball skills, his ability to high point, go up and get it are intriguing skill set that makes him worthy of a potential first round pick. AJ Brown, who I've comped a lot to Juju Smith, I think inside in the slot is going to be where he lives. I think those are kind of the guys that I think are worthy of potential, you know, first round picks, but there's a whole wave of guys after that. I'm a big fan of Bryan Edwards, who I don't think is getting enough attention, but not sure he's going to come out. His teammate, Deebo Samuel, who I think very similar to a DJ Moore type player. Yeah. Any thoughts on those, you know, those five guys that maybe I just mentioned, you know, and just the thought in general of the wide receiver position, how it's changed?
Yeah, so the number one wide receiver is the player you throw the ball the most to at this point. You know what I mean? Like, for the Kansas City Chiefs, which is one of the best offenses in the league, it's Travis Kelce. He has the greatest target share on the team. He's the tight end. You know what I mean? Like, you, if you're pigeonholing yourself in the age of the 2018 NFL offense into making sure your outside wide receiver is at least 6'2", and he's at least 210 pounds, and he has the catch radius this big, that's dumb. And you're left behind in an age of innovation and an age of creativity, and your offense will suffer for it, right? And one of the overarching themes of the conversation around this wide receiver class is if you have an old style coaching staff or if you have an old style general manager, and if there's not a great pipeline of communication between your front office and your scouts and then your positional coaches. So your scouts don't really know what your positional coaches need, and your positional coaches don't really know what the prototypes are for the offensive coordinator. You know, you need to have that freedom and you need to have that communication between the front office, between the coaching staff, in order to execute a modern offense. You know, you need to know what prototypes you need at the wide receiver position. Do you need the smaller slot guy? Do you want a possession style guy? Do you need a high point guy? What's the glaring weakness on your receiving core? And once you know that, this class has multiple players for you. Because like you said, probably with DK Metcalf dealing with that neck injury, the redshirt sophomore out of Ole Miss, he still may even come out, and then we've got to recalibrate. But with him dealing with a neck injury, yeah, there's probably nobody who's a clear top 10. But if you're looking for a possession guy who can work the intermediate levels of the field, and you put on the tape of Deebo Samuel, and then A.J. Brown, and then Kelvin Harmon, who's even got skills down the field as well. I like Kelvin Harmon a lot. And you say, oh, no, I can't find my guy. What are you looking at? These are all potential top 50 picks. Deebo, maybe you're a little bit worried about injury concerns. Those guys are stellar. You need yourself like a deep possession guy, and you're looking at 6'6", Hakeem Butler, and you're looking at 6'3", J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. You're looking at 6'4", N'Keal Harry. You're looking at 6'6", Colin Johnson. And you can't find your guy? Like, what are you doing? This is, you know, if you understand what skill set you need, this class has something for everybody. It's a smorgasbord. It's the big old box with the drop claw in the arcade. You just got to go find the toy you want and make sure you grab him at the right time. You know what I mean? This is a very strong and deep class with a bunch of talent and skills in that regard. So like you said, I think Harmon's a strong player. Deebo to DJ Moore is a comp that we love at the Draft Network. We've been using it for a while. Haven't seen Brian Edwards. He's too young. There's too many of them. I can't watch him yet. I'm excited to do it. And then A.J. Brown is a guy I've warmed up to. I think his 2018 tape has been a little stronger, and he's playing on the outside during the Metcalf injury, which is big for his evaluation. So he has a chance to rise for me. And I feel very similarly to how you did about N'Keal Harry. Deep separation. He's just too willing to play in contest and catch situations when he doesn't have to, which is a little bit lazy, and he's going to have to clean that up. But there's a lot to like about him.
Yeah, and another guy who I don't think is a top 100 guy, but I'm really intrigued by, and I think the NFL will be as well as a day three guy, is I think Stanley Morgan Jr. is one of the better route runners in the country at Nebraska. I was impressed with his performance this weekend against Ohio State. Obviously, Nebraska, a very undermanned team, going against a team like Ohio State, but really looks solid. I think he's a guy who's going to fly under the radar, and I think he's a guy who's going to look good in the pre-draft process. If he plays at any of the All-Star games, if he, you know, at the combine, I think he's going to look good in his route running. And I think he's a guy who, you know, look, you see guys like Adam Humphrey and guys like that performing at the NFL level, those slot wide receivers that can just get open. I think Stanley Morgan is going to be one of those guys that we're talking about that might not get a ton of attention. A lot of people might not even know the name, but I like him a lot as a day three prospect who I'm intrigued by his overall skill set, in particular his route running. I do want to pick your brain now because I know that you mentioned his name, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. I'm going to kind of group in David Sills there as well. I've had a hard time with these type of players. When I watched them in the summer, I was pretty down on them, regardless of their statistical their production last year. I probably had them down as like in the 17 to 21 range for draft eligible prospects. They've moved up a little bit this year because, you know, again, it's hard to, you know, continue to, you know, find flaws in them when they're producing at such a high level at the collegiate game. But any concerns on your part about their athleticism and their ability at the next level to, you just mentioned it with N'Keal Harry, but I even have more concerns about Arcega-Whiteside and David Sills in terms of, I don't think they're as good at the catch point as a guy like N'Keal Harry, but I even have more athletic and separation quickness concerns about those two guys. And I don't know, maybe it's his recency bias. I can't get away from the fact that I liked Alan Lazard as a prospect last year. I thought he was going to be a round four guy. I thought Simi Cobbs was going to be a draftable prospect. I thought Jahlil Scott had a chance to go a little bit higher. And I look at those guys like Lazard and Scott and Cobb, and I see to myself, like, I think they kind of were pretty similar in how they won, and they were all super productive in college to a guy like Arcega Whiteside and David Sills. Mm-hmm. Where do you, is there something that maybe I'm missing? I'd love to get a different perspective. You know, what intrigues you about Arcega Whiteside? And you didn't mention Sills, so I don't know if you feel similar to him that you do about Arcega Whiteside that makes you think that they're guys that are going to be solid producers at the NFL level, maybe have a shot to be top 100 picks, and the NFL is going to like them more than maybe last year when they clearly showed signs of not liking guys like Lazard, Cobbs, and Scott.
Yeah, so Sills is a guy who was like a fringe top 10 guy for me coming in, and then as other receivers have really exploded this year, he's fallen down for me. And so, yeah, that middle teens range as far as where he stacks up with the rest of the class makes sense for him. Simply, he's got a skill set and he doesn't have another skill set, you know what I mean? And he's going to be a player who I think the NFL is going to be interested in him because of the quarterbacking background, which is always fun. And obviously, he's a catch radius monster. He's 6'5 with hoses. And so, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how he's valued. And you know, you got to get him into tests in West Virginia. He's not necessarily running a ton of complex routes, you know, whatever. But Arcega Whiteside is a guy who my brand's been attached to a lot. And it's funny because now I think a lot of people are a little bit too high on him and need to calibrate down a touch. But coming into this season, evaluating the Pac-12 guys, which is my primary conference for the Draft Network, I had him above N'Keal Harry, and it was something a lot of people didn't like. And probably a lot of people still wouldn't, but I was very excited to see Arcega Whiteside really have a strong season thus far. And when it comes to Whiteside, you know, he's not the twitchiest dude in the face of the planet, and absolutely, we got to see what he looks like athletically. But what we have, and a lot of it's going to come back to that whole basketball background thing where Arcega Whiteside was the son of two basketball players and play, you know, was a highly ranked recruit as a basketball player in high school. You have leverage and you have footwork. Arcega Whiteside wins a lot of reps, whether it's downfield, you know, deep balls, or whether it's jump balls in the red zone, or if it's just in breaking routes, wins a lot of routes early, in my opinion, because he's so quick to gain leverage and he boxes out with that mentality of a stretch four, you know, of a center. You know, he knows how to establish his body frame and his physical positioning so early that he wins a lot of reps before the ball even gets there. Another player like N'Keal Harry, who's a little too willing to play a physical game, and you have to wonder how that's going to translate. Arcega Whiteside wants to put you on his back and then just make the catch out here and keep the ball out here away from you at all times. He does it with such a resounding degree of success, though, since 2017, that it's tough to ignore and it's tough to, you know, not assume that that's going to translate really well. And then the footwork thing. Arcega Whiteside has a very, very clean, crisp footwork. Again, not the twitchiest guy, but he does have good burst, in my opinion, because he's got such long strides. So he can really eat up 10 yards on you quick and draw even with you when he's attacking downfield. And then once you introduce his physical frame and his leverage, he's in a good position the second he's even with you. He's kind of already won that set. And so I think that his ability to burst on a straight line because he's got such long strides is something that we underappreciate with Arcega Whiteside. I think he can really explode out of his stance and he can gain ground on you much quicker than you anticipate. In that way, in that trait alone, it's not a perfect comparison. That's one of DeAndre Hopkins' great skills. Is Hopkins is a strong route runner at the line of scrimmage who can really eat up 10 yards on you in like four steps. And to me, Arcega Whiteside also has that trait, which really helps a future downfield threat at the NFL level. So I think Arcega Whiteside's got a lot of good stuff. A lot of it comes from his basketball background. He's part of my brand. So we're fighting on this one, Paul. It's our first one. We'll fight.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you bring up a lot of good points there, and hearing you describe him and discuss him, it sounds like you feel he's a very different player than David Sills and a much more well-balanced and well-rounded type player. And it's something that, you know, I'm going to watch closely here as the rest of this year kind of unfolds. And, you know, we watch a lot of these guys in the summer to write the scouting notebook. And then we watch a lot of games live during the year. We take some additional notes, but then we really cycle back after the season ends, you know, and do massive updates to the scouting notebook, you know, in those January through, you know, early March time leading into the draft. So I'm excited to kind of sit down and watch him again, not just throw on a game of Stanford and kind of watch him that way, but really hone in on him similar to what I did last summer to kind of see if I see, you know, more of what you're talking about, because he is a guy that's getting a lot of attention. And it's just something that, you know, I could have missed some things. And again, I think that recency bias has maybe made me have some concerns about those type of players. After a couple guys that I liked last year, it was obvious that the NFL did not really take to their skill set at all. So this segment's gone a little bit long, so I just want to mention one tight end before we move on real quick, because this is a guy I've been banging the table for all year, and I finally feel like the consensus is starting to come over to he's a top 50 type pick. I'll go as far to say I think he can be a first round pick, and I don't even think it's as far fetched anymore to think that he could push Noah Fant to be the first tight end taken if he declares. Nick Saban does a tremendous job keeping these guys there for maybe a year longer. I love Irv Smith Jr. I think he's O.J. Howard 2.0. We're seeing O.J. Howard breaking out this year and not even getting a massive target share at Tampa Bay. I love Irv Smith's game. Another really impressive performance from him this past weekend. You know, Alabama is using Irv Smith more than any other tight end they've ever had there, even more than O.J. Howard, who would kind of go, you know, games without being heard from and then explode usually in the national championship games. But, you know, obviously with Tua there, much more pass-oriented offense. We're seeing Irv Smith get opportunities on a week-in and week-out basis. A, do you think he comes out? And two, do you think he's got first-round type capabilities? And could he push Noah Fant, who for the longest time seemed to have been locked into that, you know, number one tight end spot in this upcoming draft?
Yeah, I got no idea if he comes out, because this tight end class is bananas, right? and we have so many interesting underclassmen who, if they come out, it's going to be a fun class to figure out. It's going to be a lot of strong prospects. The Irv Smith, O.J. Howard comp is so difficult to avoid because obviously this is the same system and it's the same jersey, whatever. But I remember back when you, like, it was the first time you watched O.J. Howard and you saw a guy that big just accelerate that quick and you went, oh, hello. And that's kind of the experience you have with Irv Smith. It's very analogous where, you know, he gets the ball in his hand. It's like, all right, so it was a nice route, good catch. And then he turns up field and you're like, Mary, that's insane. You know what I mean? He can fly. To me right now, I'm not enough on Irv Smith and into his tape to be able to say he's going to push Noah Fant. To me right now, I think that Noah, Caden Smith, and then Albert Okwuegbunam out of Missouri are the three guys that I have right now as the top three. And then behind them, I think you've got three stellar athletes in my rankings right now in Dawson Knox at Ole Miss, Irv Smith out of Alabama, and then Mitchell Wilcox, young man out of South Florida who has exploded this year in a very good way. Those six guys all read to me as, if everything panned out for them perfectly, top 50 picks. You know what I mean? Now, Dawson Knox, is he ever going to get enough volume to be that style of pick? I don't really know. Mitchell Wilcox, is he ever going to block anybody to be that style of pick? South Florida's probably not going to ask him to be very frank. He's a slot receiver. He's an Evan Ingram type of deployment, right? And then Irv Smith. Simply, you know, we had so little data on him as a contested catch guy or as a dealing with physicality across the middle of the field on the 2017 tape. I'm excited to go back into the 2018 tape. I haven't watched much of Alabama this year. It's not very fun to watch their games, to be frank. and are we going to be able to see the, be able to check those boxes so that we can comfortably call him a round one guy? That's what we got to find out when the breadth of tape is complete and the national championship game is done, where he undoubtedly goes for 200 yards and three touchdowns, you know? And so we're going to have to see with Irv Smith. Irv is officially on the radar among the top tight ends. There's no doubt. And I'm glad that you've got you're big on him. So you can go back to our Sega Whiteside. I'll go back to Irv. And I want to see if he can push another round one style of tight end. I think Caden Smith and Noah Fant are both already there. Then that's three tight ends up in the early class, and we're looking like that 2016 class it was with Howard and Njoku and Ingram. That'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, if a bunch of those underclassmen come out, I mean, that's gonna be a lot of fun. And again, you have like different types, kind of like what you were saying with the wide receivers. Caden Smith, very different player than Noah Fant, you know, in terms and like Mitchell Wilcox, like he's much more of like, you know, I'm not saying this is a one-to-one comparison, but similar to how Jason Witten was a really good player at the NFL level, Jason Witten wasn't this elite athlete. That's kind of, he was good at the catch point. He ran good routes. I kind of feel like that's Caden Smith's calling card. And then you got, you know, the elite athlete like Noah Fant, Irv Smith, I think could, you know, be a solid blocker, but also a rare athlete. You got Wilcox. It's a little bit of, you know, uniqueness to each of these tight ends and different styles as well. So going to be really fun if a bunch of those guys come out and really add some strength in depth to this tight end class. So let's switch to the second segment of the night, and we're going to go through this real quick to make up some time here. And that's the Devy Slant segment, where we talk about a couple underclassmen prospects. I'm just going to mention a couple names here. Anybody that you want to kind of add something to and throw your, you know, throw a thought or two on would be great. At the quarterback position, I mean, every single week, this was the first week we saw Tua really pushed, and you know, we saw him throw an interception, and you know, and in an average game for Tua, they still won 29-0. He still threw up 295 yards and two touchdowns. You know, it's impossible for me to get off the Russell Wilson comparisons in terms of his athleticism, his arm talent, his ability to make plays happen on the move. You know, I keep coming back to that. You know, he's a guy who, you know, ever since I watched that second half of the national championship last year, I said to myself, it's going to be unfair next year. Alabama has been the elite team in the country with poor quarterback play most of Nick Saban's tenure. And now they're going to add a guy who's going to be arguably a top, you know, five pick in the NFL draft when he comes out with an elite skill set. It's basically held firm this year that I don't know if anybody can beat these guys. Maybe Clemson in the playoff can give them a game. I'm not even sure about that. So Tua as a prospect, like if you have some thoughts on him when I'm finished, would be great. Just how, you know, you mentioned before that Herbert wasn't on a level of those other guys from last year. And I know you haven't dug deep probably into Tua because he's not even close to coming out yet, but just from watching, you know, games, you know, on the weekly, your current, even from last year's national championship, what do you think maybe this possible ceiling is? At the running back position, it was so great to finally see DeAndre Swift have a breakout game. All year I've been saying, why is he not getting more touches? Why is he not getting more touches? This week, Elijah Holyfield was good. DeAndre Swift was great. I think he's going to, when the time comes, I think he's going to be the first running back in the 2020 class. I see a rare skill set, his explosion, his burst, his pass catching ability. To me, he's got some Alvin Kamara to his game, which is lofty praise, but I really like DeAndre Swift. J.K. Dobbins, another guy in that class next year, really impressive, had a great week, 163 yards and three touchdowns. For a smaller guy, he's compact. And he runs hard and physical with his athleticism and his burst and his breakaway speed. Last week on the show, I mentioned the tail of the tape that I was excited to see Zach Moss versus Eno Benjamin. Eno Benjamin continues to elevate his name more into the national scene, 175 yards and two touchdowns. And then at the wide receiver position, Jerry Jeudy every week impressing me, 8 catches, 103 yards. I'm putting him up there on a Calvin Ridley-like pedestal that I think he's going to be one of the top wide receivers in when he comes out in terms of his draft class. T. Higgins is another guy I've been talking a lot about, continues to move up my boards in terms of the underclassmen. And then Donovan Peoples-Jones out of Michigan this week. Michigan really looked impressive. Wasn't asked to do too much, only 3 catches, 38 yards, and a touchdown. But I think he's another guy that when we're talking about prospects next year, similar to what we were just talking about, the 2019 wide receiver class, I think Jeudy, Higgins, and Donovan Peoples-Jones are going to be 3 guys that are squarely on our radar that are all very a little bit different and unique in what their primary calling card and trait is, but nonetheless, all are going to be high-level prospects, I think, when the time comes. So any thoughts on Tua or any of the other skill players I mentioned?
I want to talk about DeAndre Swift because that's a Philly kid, and I'm a Philly kid, and I will love him forever. Oh, man. When you know, sometimes just traits are so eye-popping, you can't deny them, and you kind of say, all right, like, I haven't even evaluated the other stuff, but if he can continue to do this, he's going to have an NFL future regardless, and that's Swift with just open field body control and elusiveness. His ability to stop and start is stupid. It's not something you see frequently. It is not something that comes out in every single class. It's one of the things that makes Barkley such a good prospect, was Barkley's ability to stop and start on his absolute dime in a point where it's very, very difficult to put an angle on him. And that's what you see with Swift. Obviously, a lot of Swift's good runs have been runway runs. You know, you're not really seeing him make some, like, you know, complex reads in the backfield or break some initial penetration or whatever. But, like, again, we're not, I'm not evaluating him yet, so I don't care about that. I care about that elite trait that I can see out in the field. When it comes to a guy like Tua, obviously it's going to be his evaluation is going to be so interesting because you want to see him tested and you want to see him flounder. Like, even for your elite quarterbacks, like Josh Rosen, I had as one of the highest ranked quarterbacks since like Luck, but I still wanted to see that Arizona game where he struggled because you want to understand why your future franchise quarterback struggles so you can keep him out of those situations. And so you really want to see Tua get challenged, hopefully by Clemson this year, maybe by the Georgia defense, or maybe it's next year, you know, who knows. But it's important to see those games to get an understanding of what hassles them and how they get frazzled. So you have a full illustration of your quarterback. If you never see it, you'll always wonder when it's coming. You know what I mean? And then when it comes to wide receivers, you didn't say his name, but Laviska Shenault out of Colorado is so much fun to watch. And there is no mistake. There is no accident that Colorado was undefeated, then dropped one, and then Laviska went down with an ankle injury, and they've dropped four in a row. There's no, that's not a mistake. This young man had like 80% of their offensive output in one of their early games this season. He's everything to them. Literally, it looks like a running back with the ball in his hands, impossibly thick frame, wide hips for a receiver. A guy who's an incredible tackle breaker, just dynamic as heck. You just get him freaking touches and let him eat. You know, he's a great find for the Buffaloes, and he's a fun player to not be evaluating, so you don't have to worry about, oh, he's only running bubbles and he's only running slants and go routes and nothing else. No, you just watch him make unbelievable plays every time he has the football, and it's super fun.
Yeah, I mean, love bringing up new names there. So really intriguing guy right there to everybody should have on their radar.
Oh, for sure.
And be watching and, you know, getting to know the name as we move forward. So let's transition this to the third segment of the night, and that's the tail of the tape, where we kind of take a look ahead to the Week 11 matchups in terms of some individual prospects we're really honing in on and looking forward to watching. I'll kind of do this in two segments. I'll bring up four games, mention a couple names that I'm intrigued with, and then if there's anybody from those four games that you want to chime in about that you're really honing in on, let me know, and then we'll do the next couple games as well. So right at the top, first game I'm intrigued to watch is South Carolina, Florida. Didn't mention him before when we were talking about the quarterback prospects, but I'm a little bit intrigued with Jake Bentley as a day three type prospect. I thought he looked really impressive last week. There's some things about his game that intrigue me, and this is going to be another tough test. Just like we saw Drew Locke go up against this Florida defense, how does Jake Bentley look in this performance? Obviously, eyes will be fixated on Deebo Samuel and Bryan Edwards. Like I mentioned before, I think Edwards is flying under the radar. I think he's a really intriguing skill set, a highly recruited prospect that, you know, really bursted out that first year. And then this year, I think he's starting to regain some of that momentum as a top caliber prospect. Wisconsin, Penn State, the running backs, again, mentioned Miles Sanders before. This game, I'm going to be fixated on him. And then Jonathan Taylor, the underclassman, who we could have mentioned in the last segment as well. You know, tough, physical runner, got some juice to his game, going to be a guy that we're talking a lot about, you know, in the 2020 draft class. I think he's more of like a James Conner style runner, not going to be a guy, you know, who gets to the outside a lot, but between the tackles, good burst, good, you know, good vision. I think Taylor's game is impressive as well. TCU, West Virginia. Again, I'll just bring it up because every single game the rest of the year, I feel like I'm going to have eyes on Will Grier closely to look for some improvement in that decision-making, look for him to, you know, kind of straddle a line between reckless and aggressiveness and, you know, be careful with the ball but not take away what makes him a special player. And then Ole Miss, Texas A&M, obviously A.J. Brown, Travion Williams, Jordan Tamu from the quarterback from Ole Miss, who I think's got some intriguing skill sets. You know, those are the guys I'm going to be watching. Any guys in those first four games that I brought up there that you either want to kind of add on to, or maybe a guy that I didn't mention that you want to talk about?
Yeah, two stick out. Vo'Shawn Joseph, this linebacker for Florida, is like, you know, soaking wet. He's 220, but he can fly, which you better if you're going to be that light playing linebacker. He can really, really scoot, and he's got nice vision when it comes to quickly developing plays in front of him, and so he can get into gaps very quickly. It's tough to deny how productive he's been. We've got to get deep into him and figure out what it's going to be like, you know, hashing out if he's a safety. Is he an overhang? What are his coverage skills? Can he add mass? He's going to be able to retain his explosiveness, add a new mass. So there's a lot to figure out because he's going to be a translational prospect. He's going to have to change. But he's been very productive for the Gators thus far. And then you brought up Ta'amu, quarterback at Ole Miss. Listen, he's the guy we're not talking about enough in this class, as far as I can tell. He's got an absolute hose. He has the mobility like you've been talking about. It's important to be able to break the pocket. He's got great touchdown field. So he's got three things that you just check off right away as, all right, he's got some of the biggest building blocks we need. Mentally, he seems like a relatively strong prospect. He's not forcing too many throws. He's willing to take checkdowns. He doesn't make bad decisions and take that many bad sacks. You got to get deeper into the All-22, see how much he's asked to throw crossers and hit intermediate windows. Ole Miss system, probably not too much with Matt Luke as the head coach there. But regardless, Tom has been a guy who I've been really, really enjoying watching and just live viewings. So he's one who interests me a lot as a quarterback in this class. I'll be paying attention to how he does against A&M. A&M's obviously a much stronger run defense than they are a pass defense, but A&M can still put pressure on you, so on and so forth.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Ta'amu is a guy who's flying under the radar a little bit. He was a guy that my co-host, Matt Caraccio, really was intrigued by when we talked about him in the summer shows previewing the quarterback position. A couple other games and prospects of note, Mississippi State, Alabama. Is there any type of letdown out of Alabama? I doubt it, but always intrigued to watch the rest of their players. More on the other side, Nick Fitzgerald. I think he came into the year as a guy who some people thought maybe could elevate himself into, you know, day two consideration. He's had a little bit of an inconsistent type year. How does he look against this Alabama defense? I expect him to probably struggle a little bit, but be watching that close, because when Alabama has had some, you know, over the years, it has been the quarterback that can make plays with his legs that have sometime have had some success against Alabama's team. Oregon, Utah, obviously Justin Herbert, we talked a lot about him. How does he look? And then how does Zach Moss look in this performance? Two guys we've already touched upon, squarely be guys I'll be watching closely in that one. Auburn, Georgia. Is it a little bit of a letdown spot for Georgia after their win last week? They already know they have the SEC. You know, they're in the title game already. But obviously, if they want to have national title aspirations and be in that playoff, they have to run the table and beat Alabama. So I think they should be up for it. A guy who I know you're a fan of, we didn't get a chance to bring him up before. I'm really excited to watch Riley Ridley in this. I think he's a day two type prospect. He's squarely in my top eight wide receivers for this class. I think he can win at all three levels of the field. Excited to watch him. Isaac Nauta is another tight end that I think, you know, not used a lot there, but I think there's some intriguing skill set. Very high recruit a couple years ago, had a really strong freshman year, hasn't been used too much, but he's made a little bit of an impact the last couple games. Interested to see if that carries over to this one. Obviously, Jared Stidham, how does he look in this game again? Another opportunity for him against a big-time team to have, you know, a big-time signature game that maybe tries to help him elevate his stock a little bit, maybe similar to what Drew Locke did last week against Florida. And then Clemson versus BC. How does A.J. Dillon, the underclassman running back, look against this elite Clemson defense? Another underclassman running back, Travis Etienne, really intriguing prospect. And then obviously the freshman quarterback, Trevor Lawrence. Obviously, he's going to be a guy that we're talking about for years and years. I think similar to what we were talking about Andrew Luck for years, I think we're going to be talking about Trevor Lawrence, just kind of waiting for him to eventually, you know, become draft eligible. Every week I watch him, I come away impressed. He doesn't seem like a freshman out there. Really excited to watch him as often as I get a chance to. So any thoughts on anybody from those four games that I just mentioned?
Yeah, I'm happy you brought up Riley Ridley. I'm excited to see him go up against Auburn. Auburn's always got a strong secondary. Ridley is another guy who simply we haven't talked about enough in this wide receiver class in terms of how explosive he is coming off the line of scrimmage, how well he fights with his hands in the first 5 yards of the contact window. Then he's a great contested catch guy. He's not like his brother. He's like his brother that he's good, but he's not like his brother in terms of play style and the way that he wins. And going up against Auburn, I think Auburn's defensive tackle, Derrick Brown, is a player who I was lower on coming into the season because I didn't see a lot of consistency. And I think he's really taken a step forward this year. I've been more impressed with what he's done. I mean, he had a great game against A&M. Now he goes up against a stiffer interior line in Georgia. I want to see him show up every snap. I don't want to see him take reps off. I want to see if that pass rush juice, that power as a bull rusher, continues to translate week in and week out. And then when it comes to Clemson, BC, it's those two outside guys, Zach Allen and Wyatt Ray, both of whom I think are top 100, you know, first three round players. I think Wyatt Ray is widely slept on. Clemson obviously has the offensive tackle there in Mitch Hyatt, who's probably going to move to guard and to center. But Hyatt is still a player who can challenge you with his hand placement, can challenge you with his technique. And so I want to see Ray beat him with bend around the edge, and I want to see Allen beat him with power right through the midline, which is with the strengths of these rushers. I think it's going to be a good litmus test for a BC team that has kind of shaky to start the year, but has really punched at their weight in the past few weeks. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. That's a good environment up there at Alumni Stadium too. So I'm excited to see this game. I don't think Clemson is going to lose it, but I think BC is a hard-nosed team that can dictate pace. And so it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm ready to watch that game and watch Clemson get tested a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. That's going to be a fun one to have eyes on this weekend. So let's round out the night with the final segment of the night, and that is the NFL Rookie Report, where we kind of take a look at what's going on with the NFL rookies in their first year here. Let's start at the quarterback position. I've talked so much, you know, every week in these episodes about these guys that I'm going to love to kind of get a different perspective. Obviously, Baker Mayfield, first game without Hugh Jackson there. Offense looked a little bit more creativity there. They used Duke Johnson a little bit. I think, obviously, there's going to be a new offensive-minded, I think, head coach there next year. So it'll be interesting to see Baker in a new environment, new offense next year to see if he can kind of take off, become the guy. I got to imagine Lamar Jackson's time is coming soon. I was hoping it was going to be off the bye, but John Harbaugh came out yesterday and said that Joe Flacco is still his guy. I think if Baltimore continues to struggle, it's inevitable down the stretch that Lamar is going to see some starts. If you play in dynasty leagues, go out and try to get Lamar Jackson now, because I think the minute he starts playing, you're going to see explosiveness out of him. You're going to see fantasy goodness, and it's going to be a lot harder to get him then. See if maybe you can find an owner who has him and has an immediate need now, and see if you can get a hold of Lamar Jackson. Sam Darnold, another 4 interception, really struggling of late. He was always a guy who I thought needed some time to adjust and sit maybe at the NFL level, but he's taking his lumps this year. I still am a believer that he's going to turn this around. I think the Jets need to go out this offseason and kind of do what the Bears did for Mitchell Trubisky and get him some weapons to try to kind of jumpstart that offense a little bit next year, upgrade the O-line as well. So, Ben, any thoughts on the rookie quarterbacks as a whole? Has anything surprised you? Has anything, for good or bad, maybe, something, that you weren't expecting that you've seen, or maybe something that's kind of let you down from these quarterbacks? I know you studied these guys at length last year.
Yeah, I think the most surprising thing is how well Rosen is playing with such poor help. In terms of the coaching staff, obviously, you have a new offensive coordinator now, Byron Leftwich, who seems to be opening things up a little bit. But even then, that offensive line is in shambles. The running game is not anything to write home about. And then Fitzgerald and Christian Kirk are doing what they can, really, but neither one of them is a really elite, strong wide receiver, in my opinion. Kirk's, I think, has been impressive in his rookie year. And so Rosen's playing with a lot of his shoulders, which honestly he's used to from his time at UCLA. I would have expected a bit more struggles from him. I think he's showed out pretty nicely for what you could expect from him. And then the other surprise would be the Bills' offense is at its best when Josh Allen is behind center, which even, for Josh Allen's biggest fans, he was a guy who you kind of anticipated needing time. But, obviously you're only measuring him against Nathan Peterman and Derek Anderson. But Allen's back to throwing now, and Buffalo needs to get him back on our center. He gives them their best chance to win football games this year, which is not something you expected from Allen.
Yeah, absolutely. And correct me if I'm wrong, but if I remember correctly, you were somewhat of a fan of Kyle Laletta in last year's draft process. Am I correct in remembering that?
Yeah.
Okay. So, as a Giants fan myself, as the Giants season has completely, hit the toilet, we may see some Kyle Laletta starts down the stretch of this year. It would be foolish if we don't. What's your take on him? We already talked a lot about this quarterback class upcoming, and there's a lot of question marks. From what you've seen, I know you haven't dug in on this quarterback class anywhere near as much as you did, for last year's draft class yet. But if you were going to kind of say Laletta to some of these guys that are going to be available, maybe in day 2 of this draft class, where would you kind of maybe, some general takes, like if he plays well down the year and Herbert's not available at the top of the first round, do you think it would behoove the Giants to maybe give Laletta a year to see what he can do rather than pushing the envelopes with another second round pick at, a second round guy? You give Laletta a year, and then if it doesn't work out, attack the 2020 draft. Do you think Laletta is on par with some of those guys who we think could be day 2 guys, like Will Greer or, Drew Locke or, Daniel Jones? Or do you think he's a step below those guys?
Yeah, Laletta is interesting because obviously I think it's very out of character for what we saw of him in the pre-draft cycle, for him to be arrested in a really weird and dangerous situation with the police, that was shocking. So you don't really know what they're going to be doing with him in the building and how people would respond to him getting a starting look recently, or recently after that sort of an incident, I should say. But he's a guy, you got to see what you have with him. Because Lauletta, obviously coming from Richmond FCS school, the jump is big. And so you don't know how well things are going to translate with him. And you've got to get him out onto the field against NFL defenses to see, okay, is this ball velocity enough? Is the mental processing enough? Is the size enough? So on and so forth. Even if you like Lauletta and Herbert doesn't come out, I think you still draft the quarterback reasonably high. You don't have to go trading up for one if you're not in love with one. But go get yourself one, even if it's a Drew Lock or Jarrett Stidham or, you know, whatever, Daniel Jones, Will Greer, just one of these, you know, senior, bigger guys, you know, round two, round three, whatever. Bring them into the building and have options, have guys to work out, see if you hit, because it's quarterback. If you don't have one, you're not going to be successful at the NFL level. The end. And then if you miss on two, then you miss on two. You're still bad. You're still going to have an early pick, and you're going to be in position to go get somebody in the 2020 class. You know, because of what the quarterback position means to an NFL team, I am vastly averse to the idea of saying, well, we don't exactly like what we have as far as options in the draft, so we're going to wait on it. To me, that's just asking to become the Jacksonville Jaguars. There's the phonetics of that. It's asking to become the Jags and be at a point where you're just strapped to a guy who's always going to limit you, and that's purgatory.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that assessment wholeheartedly, that you got to just keep attacking the quarterback position until you find one. If we take this to the running back position, not a lot to talk about in this past week. Nick Chubb still heavily involved, even though Duke Johnson saw a lot of touches this past week. I think Nick Chubb's job is safe in the role that he has. Two down, between the tackles, occasionally kick it outside, runs really hard. I think he's a little bit more of an athletic version of Jordan Howard. If you know, for the fantasy football people, he's going to be a little bit touchdown dependent at times because he doesn't catch a lot of passes out of the backfield, but still going to be heavily involved, even in games that they're trailing, as we've seen the last few weeks, still seeing a very heavy workload and touch count there as well. Kerryon Johnson, a little bit of a backseat this week because Theo Riddick was back. Riddick took up a lot of those pass-catching opportunities, which until Kerryon Johnson is clearly the guy playing on third downs and in those pass catching roles, you're going to see a little bit of an inconsistent week up and down here in terms of his fantasy production. More of an RB2, but I'm still a guy who I would use this if he down the stretch, you know, is inconsistent, isn't seeing a lot of work in the pass catching game. It's not because he can't do it. I think it's just because of Riddick's presence right now. I think by the time next year rolls around, Kerryon Johnson's squarely going to be the guy that's seeing a 17 to 19 touch count a week, a guy who's catching passes. To be honest with you, with the uncertainty of all the running backs in this upcoming draft class, if I'm in a dynasty rookie type league, I would trade my first round rookie pick probably for a guy like Kerryon Johnson. Still believe in the talent. Philip Lindsay, every time I watch him, I think Devontae Freeman. You know, small guy, but not a guy who can't put his head down, finish runs aggressively, has just taken that job by, you know, and held on to it. Once Royce Freeman comes back, he'll give up a little bit of that workload, but I don't think Lindsay's going away for people that maybe thought it was a little bit of a fluke. Really good in pass protection, still gonna, you know, good receiver out of the backfield. I think next year Devontae Booker probably won't be there, and they'll probably just roll mostly with Philip Lindsay and Royce Freeman. Ito Smith, great buy guy now because I don't think Tevin Coleman's going to be on the roster next year. He's going to cash in free agency somewhere for a bigger role, but I think Ito Smith, you're seeing that Atlanta's a fan of him. They like utilizing him, but there might be people that look at it long term and say, I don't see a lot of long term viability in terms of a dynasty league because Freeman and Coleman, maybe they don't know Coleman's in, you know, a pending free agent. I think Ito Smith is a guy you could buy pretty cheap, and next year could be a pretty solid, you know, RB4 flex type player in deep dynasty leagues as well. Any thoughts on the running back position? Doesn't really have to be the guys I mentioned. Could be anything that's disappointed you or surprised you as whole about the running back position, Ben.
It's so disappointing that Ronald Jones hasn't earned himself snaps in Tampa. To me, that's a huge disappointment. Ronald Jones was a guy who was my last round one grade in that class. And yeah, he was smallish, but I saw a really flexible, smart runner who understood how to come into contact, could maximize yardage, break more tackles than you expected. From what I'm being told by Tampa Beats and by guys who are following, he just looks very tentative. He's not used to the increased speed of the NFL. Tampa season is going to be comfortably, I think, down the drain relatively shortly here, if not already. And accordingly, I think you got to get the young man out on the field. And even if he struggles and the yards per carry is bad and he's taking hits, you've got to let him get accustomed to NFL speed if that's really what his issue is. And so Ronald Jones, to me, has been a huge disappointment in that regard. I expected a lot more from him coming out. Happy to see Nick Chubb getting more snaps, though. That's my music right there. I love Nick Chubb.
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason that the last 4 to 6 weeks of the season, Ronald Jones isn't seeing 20 touches a game. You know, right, somewhere in that 16 to 20 touches, just to see what you got in him. I mean, he was a second-round pick. You need to know that. You know, you need to know where you stand at the running back position going into next season. I mean, they already have quarterback questions. You know, do they, you know, keep Jameis Winston? Do they move on from Jameis Winston? You know, I don't know even right now why Ryan Fitzpatrick's playing. I think the rest of the year should be about evaluating Winston some more. Maybe they already know that he's not the guy who's going to be there long-term, and they don't want to risk that 50-year injury guarantee, and that's why they're just going to keep him on the sideline the rest of the year. But for Jones, get him out on the field, get him a heavy workload, and let's see what we got in him. And then let's round out the night with the pass catchers. Not much at the tight end position. Christopher Herndon is a guy I continue to say intriguing skill set. I liked him a lot in the pre-draft process, you know, but he kind of was under the radar because he was injured, so he wasn't doing much in that pre-draft process. But I should say I liked him on film, and then he kind of was just like MIA a little bit during the pre-draft process due to his injury. I thought the Jets made a really good selection there on day three, and we're starting to see him emerge as a factor in that. And as Sam Darnold gets more and more comfortable, as the Jets get hopefully upgrade the wide receiver position this offseason, I think Herndon is a guy that could develop into a very solid starting tight end there, and a guy that, you know, Sam Darnold really looks to. He already seems to trust him and have some chemistry with him. So I think stock up on Christopher Herndon. Jordan Thomas, former wide receiver, is a guy who's kind of taken the tight end position for the Houston Texans and scored a bunch of touchdowns, big red zone weapon. He's kind of leapfrogged Jordan Akins, who was a surprise third round pick. Jordan Thomas is a guy who stocks up a little bit. Mark Andrews, been waiting for Hayden Hurst to kind of seize control of that like he was doing in the summer, but then he suffered the injury and now he's been kind of slow to get back to taking on a big workload. Mark Andrews, always a guy who's a solid receiver, right now still holding on to a pretty significant role there. So his stock's up. As for, like I keep saying every week, if you like the tight ends last year, the early guys, Gesicki, Goddard, Hurst, in fantasy, they're all buy low opportunities right now because their value is obviously really low right now. And then at the wide receiver position, first guy I want to bring up, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, seems to be a guy that Aaron Rodgers trusts. He seems to have worked his way into potentially the number two role in Green Bay, you know, in terms of production, in terms of fantasy stuff. That is a really viable and really important role. His combination of size and speed, really intriguing skill set. They drafted three wide receivers. Jamon Moore is yet to be heard from. We've seen a little bit of Equanimeous St. Brown, but it's mostly been Valdes-Scantling. Stock up there. I love Tre'Quan Smith's overall game. He's playing a huge percentage of the snaps. I think we're going to see another breakout game soon like we did on that Monday night one. I thought it was going to be this past week against the Rams. Maybe it's this upcoming week against the Bengals. DJ Moore right now, a little bit inconsistent at Carolina. You know, they have a lot of guys there. Curtis Samuel has some intriguing skill set, could do some of the same things DJ Moore can do. You know, obviously Funchess, Olsen, Christian McCaffrey. So right now, DJ Moore, a little bit inconsistent. But I think moving forward by next year, he's going to start to see a little bit more consistency and get a little bit bigger of the target share, and a guy I'd be buying in dynasty leagues as well. Cortland Sutton in his first week as a starter, okay game. I think his role will continue to grow, see a higher target share as well. Any thoughts, Ben, to round out the night here on the wide receivers or the tight ends from this draft class?
Yeah, I think Dallas Goedert, like you said, buy low. I'm an Eagles fan, and the Eagles best personnel package by far in terms of success rate, run and pass, is 12. Goddard's been an incredible blocker for them. He's been a great route runner. He puts the defense in matchup nightmares. He forces base personnel onto the field, and then teams are screwed when it comes to Ertz and Goddard catching passes. I very much think that Goddard is a guy who's going to earn his way into more snaps simply because the Philadelphia offense, which desperately needs a shot in the arm, obviously has added Golden Tate, so they're probably going to be working him in there as well. They're going to recognize, especially over the bye week when they kind of take stock, that, man, when they're in 12 personnel, things get a lot stronger for them. So I can't say I've watched a lot of the rookie tight ends, but I do watch Dallas Goedert every Sunday, and I wish I watched more of him. And so I was big Goedert hype when he came out. I thought he was a round one prospect, and he's playing like it for Philadelphia.
Yeah, absolutely. It's hard not to watch him and have some visions of, you know, a Travis Kelce type player. Obviously, his role, it's going to take some time before he becomes a consistent week in and week out producer because Zach Ertz is still tremendous. But, you know, listen, talent eventually rises to the top. They will utilize more of those two tight end sets on a regular basis. If, you know, as he warrants it and as he earns that as well. And when he's out there, he produces. And, you know, you're going to see that. I think the Eagles are going to slowly but surely run away with that division. And that could be a little bit of a secret weapon that they have there down the stretch and potentially, you know, in a playoff game, really unleash him in a big moment, big spot, because I think he can be a big time producer there as that second tight end. So, Ben, this was so much fun. Thank you so much for joining me this evening, breaking down all these prospects as we, you know, look around the country as we do each and every week here at Saturday to Sunday. Let the audience know where they can find your work, what your Twitter handle is, what you guys got going on at NFL Draft Network, and anything else you got going on.
Yeah, so no, thanks for having me on, Paul. It's always a blast. I'm Ben on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. Solak is S-O-L-A-K. The Draft Network is on Twitter at Draft Network LLC, and it's thedraftnetwork.com. And we're excited to be pulling out a lot of new stuff, a lot of big stuff for the upcoming draft season. So the site's getting a revamp, and some of the new apps and the features are coming up, including building your own big board and simulating mock drafts and a lot of really fun stuff. And so get ready for all that work. That'll be coming out in the next couple months. So make sure you're just following all that stuff.
Yeah, guys, make sure you get over there. Great resource. So much great content they're putting in on a weekly basis. Check out their podcast as well. Follow them all on Twitter. All excellent stuff. Parting shots for me. Make sure if you haven't checked it out yet, get over to the Saturday to Sunday Football website. Click on the premium content tab, and for $9.99, you get access to all four of our premium notebooks. That includes the 2019 Scouting Notebook, which has player profiles on about 75 offensive skill players right now, has been updated during the year with major updates following the season. In addition, you get the Rankings Notebook. It has our draft eligible rankings, our Dynasty Rookie rankings, our Devy rankings, Freshman rankings. Both of those are immediately available upon purchase and updated throughout the draft months and the NFL draft as well. And then in March or so, or February, March, you get the Freshman Notebook, which is player profiles on the top 40 or 50 incoming freshmen for next year's of college football. And then in April, you get the Draft Projections Notebook, which is projecting how we expect it to go on draft weekend. Tabs for every single player, offense and defense, how we expect it to go, their measurements, notes on the player, a tab that has a top 32 projection, a tab for a top 100, and then a tab trying to predict every player that's going to be taken in the NFL draft that weekend. So you get all of it for $9.99. It is the best way to support the show and to help Matt and I continue to grow the brand and continue to do what we do every single week for you. So on behalf of Matt, on behalf of our sound and tech engineer, David Nakano, and on behalf of our special guest this evening, Ben Solak, thank you for joining us. And we look forward next time taking you from Saturday to Sunday.